I'm Nicolette Thomas, and this is my podcast, Watching with Friends. Every week, we watch and discuss a show or movie, and I invite a friend or two to join in.
Today, we will be talking about the 2000 classic, The Color of Friendship. In 1977, Piper Dellums, a girl living in Washington, D.C. with her father, Congressman Ron Dellums, asks to see if she can have a South African exchange student stay with the family. Her father is an opponent to the South African apartheid system, a system that suppresses black Africans. In South Africa, Mari Bach is a white South African who lives in a manor house with her parents and brother. They are comfortable and benefit from the system of apartheid without questioning its morality. Mari's father is a South African policeman who can't hide his joy when Stephen Biko, a black South African man fighting against apartheid, was then captured. Mari wants to do study exchange in America and convinces her father that this is a good idea. Mari is a little bit racially blind, considering her best friend Flora is also her housemaid. Before she leaves for America, Mari's little brother catches a weaver bird, and Flora tells them about how she used to watch them when she was a little girl. Upon meeting each other, Mari and Piper have misconstrued notions about each other and their countries. Mari does not think that there are black politicians, only knowing that the patriarch of her host family is Congressman Dellums. And though Piper is expecting a South African exchange student, she did not realize that there are white residents. Mari does decide to stay with the Dellums, and the family does grow close. Mari sees people of different races getting along and realizes how much she and Piper have in common. The two become good friends, and Mari also begins to see her host family as individuals and learns to live among them day to day. Gradually, she develops a better understanding of what life under apartheid must be for black South Africans. When Stephen Biko dies under suspicious circumstances in custody of the South African police, there are mass protests around the world, including the South African embassy in Washington, D.C. In the wake of these protests, the embassy diplomats arrive at the Dellums house to take Mari to the embassy and intend to send her back to South Africa. Congressman Dellum goes to the South African embassy and threatens to tell the press that the embassy kidnapped Mari from her host family. The embassy releases Mari. Mari returns to the Dellums without fully understanding what happened to her and why, and during discussion with Piper, she makes a cold, offhanded comment about Biko's death. Outraged, Piper shouts at her for being blind to the racial struggle happening in South Africa. Hurt, Mari runs outside and the congressman follows her. He tells Mari that the United States had a long, hard history of trying to overcome problems, which is what the South Africa is doing right now, and she finally fully grasps what liberation fighters of South Africa stand for. Mari leaves the United States, now a different person. When she returns home, the first person she greets is Flora. Secretly, Mari shows her an ANC flag sewn inside her coat, signifying her decision to stand side with the Black Liberation Movement. Flora is touched and pleased, and Mari releases the weaver bird. After this quick break, we will get into our discussion of The Color of Friendship.
Love. Right,
but let's talk about this movie.
All right, so overall, what did you think?
I liked it. I mean, it had a lot of hard, again, I liked it because the way Disney always hits like those hard those hard important issues and makes it so younger generations can understand it, as opposed to learning it in school and not really understanding it because they don't see it firsthand, whereas like Disney did a good job with showing how the racism aspect is an issue everywhere, no matter what it is, where you are. So, because I think this movie took place in what, 1977?
Yeah, so it takes place in the late 70s. Uh-huh. And apartheid, which was a real thing, didn't.
Yep.
Repeals until 1994.
Yeah, I was gonna say they had an apartheid like it recently within the last, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We were young. We remember the not like remembered them, but we're not young, but a little bit old enough to like know what they were and knew that Africa still had them and all that. So it was kind of like, you know, we understood that part.
Now, did you have, like, without this movie, would you have known what apartheid was?
Yeah. I learned about it in one of my history classes. Mr. Cassidy did a good job about teaching us about
it. But that apartheid was high school.
That was high school. But, I mean, I kind of, it's been a long time since apartheid. I knew the basics of it. I didn't know, you know, how deep it was, but like I knew the basics of it. I knew it was repealed in the 90s and all that, but
yeah,
they did it. They really went into it.
Yeah. Cause, actually based off of Mr. Cassidy, I ended mm-hmm. up, when I was in college, I took a African history class mm-hmm. and I mean, shit, like it went through everything.
I bet.
Oh, it was nuts. But we actually read a few books uh-huh. by people who lived through apartheid. And then we watched a few films. And one of them, it was a film that was made during, like, I think it was the 80s.
Oh, boy.
And it was trying to show the outside world that mm-hmm. South Africa wasn't that bad. So they actually had like actors mingling, but it like you can tell they were just like, this is not normal.
Yeah, right.
And, like the movie got like nominated for awards and stuff, and I'm just like, oh my god, that's so awful. Like, but people were so blinded by things that. And then I was really weirded out in that class because they had us watch I think it's called District 9.
Uh-huh.
Sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But it's written by South Africans about apartheid and about kind of the after effects.
Yeah.
And the aliens are the native African peoples. And oh yeah. Oh, it's a movie. Like if you want to like And you realize, and like what, as you realize this and it's dawning on you and you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like things just got real. But this is not that movie. This is much more lighthearted.
Right. Do you want to give
those issues?
Do you want me to give the definition of apartheid just so some of these listeners at home?
Oh, yes, of course.
Know? Okay. So I Googled it because apartheid was a system of legislation that upheld segregationist policies against non-white citizens in South Africa after the National Party gained power in South Africa in 1948. its all-white government immediately began enforcing existing policies of racial segregation that was given. And it lasted for 50 years, from 1948 to 1991. Yeah. 91 it ended. So, yeah.
40, I said what, 94?
90, well, that's what it says. It says in the early 1990s, in a series of steps that led to the formation of the Democratic government in 44. So it took about 4 years to set up that, the like the Democratic government in that state to get rid of the apartheid. So 94 was right. It took about 4 years. But yeah, it's part of one of those things too. Not that, again, it's not right, because it's racism. That's all it really is. It stems down to racism. And I think a lot of it has to do is why we're so blind to all of these issues, is because we don't have to deal with it firsthand. Like, we never had to deal with apartheid in this country. Yes, we had to deal with segregation. No, but I'm saying we had to deal with segregation and stuff. But in our lifetime, I'm saying, between the 90s and now, it wasn't as severe as it was where it was noticeable. We still had it, but like, we live in Rhode Island. It's not as bad in Rhode Island as if we lived in Texas or Oklahoma or one of those weird flyover states.
I'm going to agree to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
I think that there are still issues that we're dealing with today.
Oh yeah, no, that's the agree that they're clearly still issues.
Well, because so like they had apartheid, we had Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different things, but it was all about suppression of the dark-skinned person.
Right.
And we're still dealing with those things today. And just certain movies of this, or certain points in this movie, slapped harder for me. Like, especially with everything that happened in 2020.
Yeah.
And like the fact that it was in our faces and like we can't ignore it anymore.
Right. Right. But like, that's what I'm saying is now we can't ignore it. Back when racism was at its heyday and segregation and all that, that couldn't have been ignored. But there was that time where, yes, it still existed, but it wasn't so as much in our face. Yes, it was still there. Yes, it was still present. But I think a lot of it was, again, in Rhode Island, in New England, there wasn't that much that we saw, like that we saw between 2020.
I also want to put in here really quickly, like, we are white cis women, like,
yeah,
we are not experts on this. We are not firsthand victims of any systemic racism, anything like that. I mean, we get belittled because we're women, but...
But that's as far as it goes.
I think that's all Western culture at this point, so...
But so also too, it's also New England. There aren't that many, you know, there are, but there aren't as compared to a lot of other states.
I am just also going to put this out there that one of our biggest institutions, Brown University, is built off of slave trade money.
Yeah, well, most of it was built off of slave trade money.
Yeah, like...
if you walk down downtown Newport, you can still see where they used to sell slaves at the harbor docks.
Right.
So,
but that's another thing, like the different towns as well. Like when we were growing up, there weren't many people of different races in our school. It was mostly white kids.
I think it was only one black kid we graduated with.
There was like a handful of African Americans. There was a few Asians.
Yeah, I think we only graduated with one.
Yeah,
African American. Like, there were more in our school, but I think they were younger than us. I think, but again, that's Yeah.
So, like, we were very sheltered. We were very much like Mari.
Right. And that's what I was trying to get across, is we're more sheltered, as it would be, like, I'm sure somebody watching this in Texas or Oklahoma or Georgia or a lot of those other more southern states would have a different point of view on this, just because we're more sheltered up here, but they might not, it might be different down south, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, with that being said,
right,
what did you think of Mari as our main character?
She was the one from South Africa, correct?
Yes.
Yes. I liked her. She was good. I mean, I think she did good with the culture shock aspect of it, as going from South Africa.
Oh, gosh. When she would, like...
Because
her petrified deer face. I felt that. I was just right, like, well, oh.
Because, like, even if you try and put, like these movies like this, where not necessarily the color aspect of it, but, like, going from a country like South Africa, where your family is, it's a different culture, it's a different way of life, to Washington, D.C., where it's such a drastic change. Like, I try and always think about how I would feel if it were more like I would have to deal with a culture shock, like, into a whole other country.
I don't think that's what they were going for, because there was only like one or two other white girls in that entire school sequence.
Yeah, but no, that's what, I'm not saying that that's what they were going for, but I think part of it was you kind of had to understand how, again, just the culture shock, where she's from South Africa, apartheid is still a thing, you know, she's living under a different way of life, but then she goes to America, into Washington, D.C., where it's a totally different way. That's what I'm just trying to get. Not that the whole movie was based on that, but I think one part that really stuck out to me that I always try and... I try and feel like, because that also adds to a character's backstory and how they react to things and how they understand things, is I always try and think of how I would feel if I went from one country that's not drastically different, but still South Africa is drastically different from the United States, even in the 70s, how it would feel like to, like, just move and be away from my family, go to a place I don't know, with people I don't know, and, like, just build from there, like, as a building, as part of her steps into this movie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that as something completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, going from where it's completely segregated.
Right. Well, like, yeah, that too.
And just, oh, wow, everybody mixes together. Oh, I'm so completely outnumbered,
mm-hmm,
by a group of people that in my country would be seen as less than.
Right.
And, like, I don't know if it's just me, but, like, to me, she felt threatened in that environment.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like, too, anybody in that environment situation, whether it's, you know, again, where, like, I think anybody would feel, like, I know I would feel threatened if it were, you know, if I was her, like, if I put myself in her shoes, I feel like I would, just because, again, you're going from, like you said, a very segregated place to a place where everybody mixes together, and it's, like, totally different from what you've been raised up on for, what would you want to say they were, like, 16, 15?
Mm-hmm. I think they're 14.
14, which, again, I'm sure the people who played them were like 20-something. Because this was all, too, released in 2000, I think I saw.
Color of Friendship.
Released February 5th, 2000.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So now that we've talked about Mari, let's talk about Piper.
Okay.
What did you think of Piper?
I liked her. I thought she was, you know, I liked how she had, in like how this whole thing sparked was because she had an interest in, you know, South Africa, the apartheid, and how it affected people. Like, I just it was cool how, you know, how she took interest in South Africa, and it wasn't, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, her father was an actual, like, the Dellums were an actual family.
Yeah.
He was very actively mm-hmm. against apartheid. Like, that was one of his major things. He did amazing things otherwise, but.
Oh, yeah.
He co-sponsored that bill, like.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, too. Like, how, you know, how her father's influence played so much into how she saw it. Well, yeah. I mean, it's like any parent. Like, you kind of, growing up, you know, not necessarily when you get older, you agree with your parents, but you grow up on a certain way of living and thinking and being told what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, so I think that was a bigger influence to her because of how big her dad was about speaking out about the apartheid in South Africa and everything that's happening in other Africa. Too, not South Africa.
Okay, and what did you think of the congressman?
I liked him.
I loved him.
I loved him. Like, I don't even have a I just loved him. I just, you know, because again, it also takes a lot of courage for even in America, it takes a lot of courage for a certain group of people to speak out against something that's going against the norm or going that, you know, a lot of people will go against you and say, no, you're wrong because, or no, you can't, you know, it's hard for people to speak out, just to be that brave and be able to come up with this bill and speak out against this and, you know. I loved him. Oh, I loved him.
Okay. One of the other things that really kind of, again, not to like bring up more drama, but it slapped a little harder was what escalated everything with the death of, oh gosh, what was his name? With the death of Stephen Biko. Because the whole movie starts with the capture of Stephen Biko.
Yeah. In South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mari's father is a policeman.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, is also probably hard for her because she's also seeing it from her father's point of view, being a policeman, just mainly because he's a policeman, he's told to do whether he believes in it or not. To him, and again, not that it's right, but in South Africa, you know, it's segregation. So he feels he's doing right by taking this man in custody. But yeah. It also plays along that it's hard. Sorry.
No, I'm glad we're talking about it because it's also like I'm betting Mari's going through the thought of, was my father part of this?
Right. Or, like, that always question that, you know.
Right. And
is my dad a bad guy or?
And it's also brings up the question, which I think our country is still dealing with, is like, which is the problem here? Is it the actual bad cops that are being called out, or is it the good cops who maybe didn't call it out?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting takeaway this time.
And it's always like, again, not that it's right. It depends, like you said, a good cop not calling it out. And then, but there's also another act on that, because is it, you also kind of have to see the level this cop is at. Because if he's a rookie's not going to say anything because they're so new, they're so green, you know, whether they think it's right or not, their superior officer tells them to do one thing. They question it, but it's a little different than being an older cop with more seasoned, you know, who knows the system, who knows, hey, I have to speak out against this, and then just doesn't say anything, too.
Yeah, but if you're looking at, like, the house they live in and all that kind of stuff, clearly her dad's been in the service for a while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Like, not, yeah. Clearly.
All right. Anything else to add? Anything that you kind of, like, realized this viewing or things like that?
No. I don't think so. Yeah, well, I watched it last week, so I should have rewatched it again, but I don't have anything else to add.
I have one more. And that is her maid nanny person. I forget her
Which
name.
Which one? Mara?
Mari's, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to see if I can find it. But Flora. That's her name.
Okay.
But Flora, the girl is well educated. I mean, mm-hmm. She's well educated. She knows what's probably going to happen before it happens. She knows who Congressman Dellum is. Like,
oh, yeah. She sees the handwriting on the wall.
And... Yeah. And like, she was hoping that something would happen. And the ending with her and Mari.
Mm-hmm.
And like, okay, no, you have an ally now.
Right.
And I'm here to help. Like, I liked that.
Yeah. I did too, because it was kind of like, it kind of made it so it was okay for Mari. Like, she had that safe place. She always knew she had the safe person who was with her and would help her and take care of her, not just on the nanny side, but you know, she knows it's going down.
So this movie did come out during Black History Month,
mm-hmm.
February 2000.
5th. Yeah. Yeah. February 5th. It was right at the beginning of Black History Month. Yeah.
And I remember it being played every February.
I was just going to say, and I think I believe too, it was almost like during that first month, if I remember correctly, and again, I could be very wrong, because again, this was what, 20 years ago? They played it very frequently for like that whole month.
Yeah.
I want to say on almost every week. I don't know, because see, I don't really watch like actual Disney Channel anymore.
Right, we're too old for that.
It's not cool. I'm pretty sure they don't play it anymore on Black
which History they Month. Should I think that this is a great teaching moment. I mean, it was for us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I even think like everything, it's like you said, everything that they talk about and cover in this movie and kind of deal with, we're kind of dealing with it. We're dealing with it now in present day, not the apartheid, because that's been gone for a while, but still, you know, systemic racism and bad cops being bad cops, good cops not saying anything, you know. So it's definitely still very a very prevalent movie even to this day. Even though it came out 20 years ago, it's still one of those ones that like you said, is a teaching movie. It's still relevant to this day. Like, not that, like, it's kind of like, I don't remember if you watched this movie, but I remember it very well. In one of the classes in middle school, high school, I don't know, we watched a movie called The Wave.
I did not watch that one, no.
You didn't, about cult, well, about the teacher teaching his students about
with the blue eyes and brown mentality. Eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which it's kinda like that, even though I think that movie was taking place in the '60s.
Yeah, something. It was to explain how Hitler took power.
Right. Which again is if you think about it, like this movie, it brings it down to a level where it's teachable and more understandable than just reading it in a book. Because like if you read it in a history book, how like I still think about it to this day when we learn about like all these almost in a way like get kind of getting off topic because it's going more to cults, but like that cult mentality and how one person can take power over something. You read about it and like, oh, I don't know, but then if you watch a movie like The Wave, it brings it down to a place where it's more understandable, where like, okay, I can kind of, again, not that it's right, but I can kind of see how this happened, where like in The Color of Friendship, it helps you understand more, especially for people who are more sheltered, about racism and how, you know, it shows it in a way that we can all understand it and live it through the characters.
Yeah.
Oh. And that was a good movie, by the way, The Wave, just saying.
I did see it on my own time.
It was a good movie, just because I like cult mentality. It's weird. Not in that way. I would love to study it because it fascinates me how one person, and I understand it. I do, like subconsciously, I understand, but still it like surprises me just how one person can become so, whether it's enthusiastic, manipulative, all of the
above. I got really addicted to the HBO series The Vow.
I heard of
it. Which is about the NXIVM cult.
Oh, I watched the IE Network about that. It was from one of the girls who got out. That is a very interesting cult. That one fascinates me, one of the most, next to like Helter Skelter, that drank the Kool-Aid, and all those cults. But like that cult,
it's nuts.
Well, because it's like a lot of these other cults, you know, are cults. Like you see it from the outside, you're like, okay, you know, you can kind of see that it's a cult. But like NXIVM was so well done that you didn't know it was a cult until you were in it and like deep in it till it was too late. Like,
yeah.
Especially because I watched an ID special about it and they talked to one girl who got out. She was an actress's daughter, who was in it for years, but like she explained how like it started, where like they had their first meeting at the NXIVM group, and then the next meeting they went to, they kind of split them up, and how they gradually did it so you didn't know what was happening right off the bat until it was too late and you're standing there going, wait, well, how'd I get here, you know? But again, yeah, but that stuff like that, where like just that stuff interests me so much, just that somebody can be so, whether it's smart, manipulative, whatever, can build such a structure that people believe, people will follow. Like Helter Skelter got four people to kill for him. I mean, he still went to jail for it, but still got four people into killing people for him, innocent people, had nothing to do with it. It was an actress and her husband, I think it was somebody
else. Oh, it's actress.
It was an actress,
boyfriend, and two other people.
It was a husband. It was the actress, husband, a couple that was boyfriend, girlfriend.
No, because the
was,
the
actress was pregnant.
The man that she was married to was alive until, I think he was still alive until a couple years ago.
Was he?
Yeah, it was, remember, a boyfriend.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, like just that, like
it was the 60s.
Fun fact, Helter Skelter and a couple of his followers lived with one of the Beach Boys for a while till he figured out
the man who she keeps calling Helter Skelter is Manson. In case people didn't
say that again, sorry, you were like skipping and freezing.
Marilyn Manson. Yeah, not Marilyn Manson. Charlie Manson.
And the Beach Boy he lived with was the middle one. I know a lot of Beach Boy history, just, you know.
So we went from racism to cults.
Hey, you know, it's kind of like, it could link up somehow.
Oh my gosh. All right.
I get tired enough, I'll start talking about polygamous cults.
Oh God.
Those ones are rough.
I'm gonna stop recording now because that no, is I not won't. What this podcast is about.
I won't go into that because that one's a little too much for my hurts.
Oh, we gotta do our rating.
Oh yeah. What's it out of 10? We're still doing that at 10?
Yes, out of 10.
9.
You're gonna give it a 9?
I'm gonna give it a 9.
I'm gonna give it my first 10.
Ooh, is that the first 10 ever? Or did I say?
You did 10 last week for Joey Lawrence's arms.
It's the Lawrence brother. It's like John and Taylor Thomas. Like anything he's in.
Oh, JTT.
Will be that a 10.
All right, sorry we went on a bit of a tangent on that one. Hopefully you enjoyed this. I'm super excited that this episode is coming out on the 21st anniversary of The Color of Friendship premiering. I hope that you watch it. I'm definitely going to be rewatching it again. I love this movie so much. A big thank you to Sarah for joining me again, as always. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can join us on our Instagram, and we now have a Facebook, which will both be linked in the show notes. And with that, I hope you all have a great day. Bye. Hey, no, no, no.